All right, folks, welcome back to the Mountain West Wire Football Podcast. Yes, it's been a while. We needed a break as well from stuff. So keep checking the website out, mwwire.com. That's where you can find it. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere you can get your good old podcast. Joined by Matt Kennerly, and we're going to talk some news today.
Absolutely.
There's a lot
to talk. There's a lot of it. That's the upside of not recording a football podcast for a while, is it gives you a lot to talk about.
There's a good amount of news. Schedules didn't work out. We didn't want to talk about the final three bowl games, so maybe we'll do a quick hit on each of those really quick. But we have New Mexico coaching, Fresno State coaching, East-West Shrine game stuff happened. Rontavon Tarver, he looked pretty good.
He did.
Lots of stuff we'll talk about. There's a good old flea flicker, coaching moves, and I guess we'll backtrack for a moment to go to the bowl game just really quickly. We will have probably a show. We'll kind of suss out a schedule at the end of this to figure out more consistent, because we're not leaving during the off season, just a few weeks, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
But we will kind of weave these into what's going forward. So should we go back to let me ask you this, Matt. What did you think of the canceled bowl game? Because that's one of the ones we didn't get to.
I'm a little disappointed. I'm still a little disappointed, because I thought that was going to be a really good defensive matchup at a minimum.
Yeah, that game, watching it, because it's middle of the day, I'm like, great, I work evenings, I could watch it live and not worry about wait till later. But then rain, thunder, lightning, playing at the Cotton Bowl. Boise was down 7-0 early, but it would have been a good matchup. And then, you know what the dumbest thing was about this? Is that there's a couple of dumb things. It would have been a great matchup, I think, because Boston College are pretty good. They're not amazing, but it'd be a good challenge. It'd be a decent opponent to play against, had they finish out with A.J. Dillon, their running back, who probably would have been a good match for match with Madison throughout the game. But I remember a tweet, and Boston College fans were getting all over. I think we mentioned it too, about Boise State fans were smiling leaving the game or something, like after the hours of waiting. And they tried
that was the Boston College defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and they tried to make it be a big deal about, oh, they didn't want to play, they're excited. I'm like, no, it's like, dude, why do you have to make everything about anything? And then said our players are angry and mean and upset. I'm like, I guarantee the Boise guys are probably, oh crap, this sucks. We're not, especially guys who are playing their final game ever, not like Brett Rypien or Madison, guys who will play more football. What about the guys who never play ever again football because this is it for them? I'm pretty sure they were pretty upset they didn't get to play one game, or at least even if they didn't play, hang out the sideline and watch their team play well, hopefully.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's a bunch of crap. Like, they were probably upset, but probably also, okay, we're out of here, we're having a fun time, we're hanging out, we're leaving, because they didn't want to sit in the game for 6 hours and play at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah. I wouldn't blame them, yeah.
The only thing they probably could have done better, because they knew the storm was kind of coming, is maybe TV-wise is an issue, but I don't know, have it later in the day. I don't know what they could have done to make it better, because the weather cleared up in the evening, like early evening.
Well, the one thing that everybody pointed out is, why don't you have a backup plan?
That's true.
As opposed to just trying to wait it out and seeing what happens.
It's also a reminder, this is the first postseason FBS game to be canceled since Pearl Harbor struck Hawaii when Hawaii and San Jose State were supposed to play a game back in the 40s. So it's pretty rare. But what does their backup go up to? What do you mean backup plan? That same day, a couple days later? What would be the case? That's expensive for everything involved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess to a certain extent, weather is impossible to plan for. Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe the optics of the thing that really put everybody off.
Because the weather didn't look terribly out there. It was just lightning. Not just lightning, but it wasn't a monsoon rainstorm flooding or sleet or snowing. Lightning was the issue. Because if it was rain, they'd play. It wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe later in the day, stick it on the ESPN app or ESPN News or something, could have done so. People are like, we'll go down to Jerry World 20 miles away. I'm like, that's not realistic at all to move everybody. I guess the best thing they could have done, if they saw potential weather, like, especially like I lived in that area of the country, a little bit farther south, lightning storms were a big deal. They could come and go quickly. And also lifeguard during the summer. I know summer is different than winter, but when I lifeguard in summer, like, you'd have lightning, no rain ever. It could look not overly clear, but you've seen those days where it's partly cloudy and then there's lightning in the distance, but it's not that, or lightning that covers the sky. It never rains. It's just a threat of something. We have to get everybody out of the pool. Same thing, you can't have lightning there because metal helmets, metal bleachers, everything, all that stuff there. So the only backup plan they could have done was, let's play the game at night, because going another day would have been, even 6 hours later, would have messed over all the people who were bought tickets, especially plane tickets, because game was middle of the day. Some people's flights could have been 8 p.m. in Dallas that night. And so it stinks it happened, but It's probably the right call because why would you want to sit for hours upon hours anyways after suiting up for 30 minutes and play?
That's true. And I mean, just imagine being a fan trying to wait 6 or 7 hours for a game.
Yeah. A funny thing, when I found out, I had to game, I was watching a game. I'm like, oh, I had to go run a few errands. So I paused it after the, or no, I, yeah, I paused it after the first touchdown. I'm like, oh, I'll be back in about 20 minutes. I come back, I'm like, oh, the game's canceled? What the, what happened? But it sucks, but it happened, right? Is all we could say?
Yeah.
What's the other games we missed? We missed Nevada, Arkansas State, and Hawaii Bowl, and La Tech.
That's the Arizona Bowl.
Well, there's two bowls, right?
Yeah, the Arizona Bowl and the Hawaii Bowl.
So let's do the Hawaii Bowl really quick. You probably already watched it. You probably heard about it, read about it months ago. We had our stuff on it. But my big two things about this game, which will go forward toward next year. Well, one thing, John Ursura didn't play because he had a hamstring pregame, so that basically hurt them very much in that game. Hawaii needs offensive line to be anything special. Because they got sacked, what, a dozen times, it seemed like?
It was actually 9 sacks. Was,
10 TFLs.
And you were overestimating that. Just a touch.
Just a touch. Yeah, Jalen Ferguson had that huge game for La Tech. But two things. They switched quarterbacks, again, at the beginning. I'm like, Rolovich, what are you doing? And then they bring in a 3-star guy, a pretty highly recruited guy from Utah to come in this coming fall. So it's like, I don't know what they're going to do next year going forward. But the quarterback played poorly. They had not a good running game. The offensive line was tremendous against a good defensive line, but ended up being 31-14. I don't remember. I'm trying to think of too much happened, a couple turnovers, but switching to quarterbacks, it's like, come on, just stick with the guy.
So here's a question for you, which I think ties into something that's happened more recently since the Hawaii Bowl, which is that the fact that the program signed Nick Rolovich to a 2-year extension.
Mm-hmm. No raise, but just extension.
So considering what they've been able to do in his first 3 years, was that a good move or not, in your opinion?
Yeah, they started off 6-1.
I think I would tend to agree. I was just curious.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's what it does is two things. By Rolovich is like two things it brings up. It's they're in for the long term, but it's also an extension. That's not. It's a reward, obviously, that 2 years. But it's not like you're getting a bump in pay just because.
Yeah.
It's like we mentioned before, the Kentucky model, they kept Stoops there for, what is he, near 8 or something now? Mm-hmm. They didn't fight. Kentucky's not very good at football, typically. You rotate coaches, one contract, you're out 4 to 5 years. They gave him time to build something. Kentucky's actually pretty good at football now.
Mm-hmm.
And look what Hawaii's doing. It's like you give these guys time to recruit, time to bring in your system, especially when they changed to the run and shoot, which looked well the first half of the year. We'll see next year because they lose one of the best receivers ever in John Ursura. But they have other guys coming in, Cedric Bird there. They have a couple guys coming back. It's a fine move. It just shows that, hey, we want you to be our coach, and we see improvement, and we don't want them dangling for the final year or two where it's like, oh, we have a poor season. But he shot up so quickly. Maybe we're being a tad too harsh on him for the way the end of the season poorly, but it's the right – I think it's a fine move to do. It's both. It works for both ways. It's not extra money, but it's also your security with the coach and your program. You're not changing again after 4 to 6 years.
Yeah, and I think I tend to agree. Like you mentioned, how the offensive line in the bowl game was kind of let down. Well, all 5 of their offensive linemen are coming back next year. And let's not forget, they were starting 2 freshmen and a sophomore at 3 of those spots. Ursua's coming back, or rather, Ursua's gone. So is Marcus Armstrong Brown, but. Mm-hmm. And they're losing a little bit on the depth chart, but they're bringing back most of their productive receivers, not only Cedric Burt, but JoJo Ward and you know other guys that were coming up near the end of the year. And they're not really losing that much on defense, too. For me, it's the long-term question is going to be figuring out what to do on that side of the ball. Because when they were able to hold opponents down at least a little bit, that was when they were really able to let the offense flourish. It was when the offense was stifled that the defense really had a hard time keeping up. And yeah, I don't know if that's one thing that's going to turn around in one season, but that's something that I'm really interested in following in the next 2 to 3 years is how Rolovich solves that problem.
Yeah, defense, it's been an issue because a couple of things when they go for it on 4th and short, 4th and 2, and they go 3 and out quickly, or just 3 and out because they do that. There's that, but also a couple of other things. Fred Holly's coming back. Figure out what happened with the running game because it worked well at the beginning of the year. But again, my defense is great. I think quarterback is a thing too. It's like maybe Cordero is going to be the guy, but you have Cole McDonald's, what, a sophomore?
Yes.
So they have if Cordier's a freshman, McDonald's a young guy. They brought in the guy from Utah who's pretty highly regarded. Maybe he'll do something, but they're going to need to do something at the quarterback spot to stick with the guy. Or I guarantee if they one of those two guys are probably going to transfer with it by the end of next season.
You think so?
Well, yeah. If you're, I think so, because they're both young. Yeah, they're both getting time. Unless they find a great way to split time. I'm pretty sure one probably would leave just because they've seen they could play. They've seen, like, Cordero, look what he did versus UNLV in that fourth quarter near the end of the season. He did quite well to get them. Yeah, they won that game. I mean, they think that was their bowl eligibility victory to get to seven. But McDonald, look how good it did in the first half. So I don't know. It's just going to figure something out. But either you got to stick with a guy. It's always crappy. Like with the Brett Rypien and Montel Cozart, flipping guys around, switching guys, it rarely works. And this was the worst example of that because Rolovich panicked early and went to Cordero, then went back and forth between McDonald and him. And so I'm betting one will be gone, but just stick with the guy. It's like it's just because they want to play and they've seen they can play. And the way you can transfer now, it's a little bit easier. You still have to sit out, but there's no restrictions essentially. Coach can't say you can't go to school A, B, or C. But I think that's what they want to figure out because the run and shoot, it's a lot of timing. Like I've seen it this year. I grew up watching the Houston Oilers with Warren Moon, ran the run and shoot. I did crappy junior high football where we did run and shoot offense we're really good at it. You're, 12 to 14? But it's a thing I remember one of the things, like I was tight end and whatever. You're always timing. It's always a timing thing and getting the reps in with the guys, and that's what this offense needs, going back and forth. And that's for any offense, but when you run and shoot 4 to 5 wide, you're going to be a timing offense and switching quarterbacks. It's a not the best recipe. So I think
I think the other overarching thing to keep in mind is that this was really the first year where they were able to unveil the run and shoot.
Agree.
So maybe it was inevitable that there were going to be some growing pains. But I think you're right. If they can find one person to operate the offense going into next year, again, I think they'll benefit from a lot of continuity on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and we always say the thing, we'll get to it, our preseason stuff in next few, down in May or June, but I always say it's like, yeah, I don't care if you have experience back, but it has to be good experience. So the line, I'm still going to be skeptical until they show it, but it's always, I'm not going to say it's a bad thing that you have five guys coming back who are going to start on the offensive line again, or five, right? It's still a thing where, okay, they have the game experience, but they weren't very good last year. They're okay. There's times they were better than others, but I'm not going to necessarily bump them up two spots just because everybody's back, especially for a unit, because unit was bad. But if you go back to us years ago at the Wyoming team, they were terrible with Andrew Wingard. All these guys were true freshmen playing. They were just terrible, and now look how great they are. So maybe that offensive line for Wyoming in 2 years will be one of the best in the conference because they've played so many years together. And so it's not a knock, but it's still something to look at. But should we just move on to the Arizona Bowl, which was, overtime spectacular?
Maybe not the prettiest game in the world, but I think you'll take it if you're a Nevada fan, right?
Heck yeah. Apparently Nevada, they liked our all-bowl team because they wrote an article about it, so that's cool. They were down, three wide receivers in this game?
Yeah, I think so, because Mannix had transferred out before the game, and then I think Caleb Blossom
got hurt.
Was injured during the game. Who else got hurt during the game? Brendan O'Leary Orange got hurt.
Yeah.
Romeo Dobbs also got hurt. And so by, the third and fourth quarter, they were throwing out guys that no one, unless you're paying really close attention to the Nevada program,
Ben Putman. Four catches, 114 yards, only four catches all year.
Well, not only him, but Dominic Christian also had three targets, three catches, 31 yards. Just going down the list of guys who were contributing, like Reagan Roberson, who ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown in overtime. So it gives me a little bit of hope about Nevada's future that I wasn't sure how the Wolfpack would stack up because they're losing so much on both sides of the ball. And while I still do have a lot of questions that they're going to have to answer, I am encouraged by the fact that the guys they were able to put into place where they were able to plug in and play. And even though it was, I wouldn't say the most efficient offensive game ever, they were able to make plays when it counted, especially on defense.
Yeah. Three picks.
Yeah.
10 TFLs, couple sacks.
But it was the young guys on that side of the ball that really stepped up too. Like one guy we haven't really talked about a lot, for instance, is Dom Pederson right there in the middle of the defense. In that game, he had 2.5 tackles for loss, and he was a true freshman this year. So even though they're losing a lot of key pieces like Corey Rush and Jarius McDade on that side of the ball,
Millie Creed.
he's coming back. Hausea Sakona is coming back. They've got a lot of production coming back, and I think that if you're a Nevada fan, you can feel pretty good about their position to compete next year.
Do you think, I know it's super early because they do lose Ty Ganji, which is a big deal. They do bring back Tua Tua, who could be the best running back in the conference heading into next year, him and Juwan Washington. Okay, this is going to be a hot take in here in January. Is the defense going to be really good next year, maybe?
I mean, they do have a lot to replace.
Understand. They have some guys who stepped up who didn't play much, who had big games.
I think the biggest question will be how they replace pretty much everybody on the back line because they're losing, and then not only lost Nephi Sewell to BYU on the transfer, but Damian Babers graduating, Asante Rufus is graduating,
Malik
and
Reed.
Jamon Dotson is graduating. So I think that's another that make they're. For right now, that might be maybe their second biggest question after who's going to replace Ty Ganji.
Okay, that's fair. I just like all these young guys. I forget how many they're losing, but they're getting better because they're bringing good recruits. They're guys, like you said, with a Pederson, true freshman, getting a couple sacks in that game, a couple TFLs, and playing throughout the year. And it's nice to see the offense too. Like they bring in these guys who never played and they step in right away. Yeah, Arkansas State, they're okay. They're a pretty good Sun Belt team, but they still made plays because you could easily have all these. Like, what team is good with your four string receiver being your number two? You know what I mean? So if you have teams like you lose these guys who get hurt or transfer or whatever reason don't play, these guys stepped up big, and so they'll be fine. Yeah, quarterback and I guess that secondary is a pretty big issue. But in our preseason, which we'll talk next week, they're fifth in our preseason stupid early picks, which I made sure to quote, sure to be wrong, people. Don't take too much stock into stuff in January.
It's still mid-January,
This I know, and so it's like we put those out. I'm like, no, let's do some bold projections. Let's do this. People like projections and predictions to fight and comment and argue on us with us, but it's like, please don't take them super seriously because this was done before the draft deadline. Like, who knew Usafa? Oh, what's his name? I can never say his name for Wyoming. Decided to declare for the NFL draft.
Are you talking about Johanna Gyfan?
Johanna Gyfan, yeah, I think it's something completely different. But who would have thought he was going to? He probably wasn't gonna be in Wyoming because he's looking at some Big 12 schools, but that was a shock that he was gone. And so this is made before that, but we'll see. Nevada, it's a it, this is the Matt. This is a rosy time of the year. We're gonna probably talk positive about everything and then be completely wrong on other teams, right?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
We're not gonna be negative on you unless you're Indiana football claiming to be good, right?
Is that our segue?
Go
to
for
our
it.
Next
Yeah,
topic?
exactly. What, might as well. Fresno losing their OC.
It is a pretty significant development. Kalen DeBoer, Fresno State OC for the last couple of years, is moving on to the Hoosiers, to the Big Ten. And I think I threw the numbers out there on Twitter, so if you want to go dig into our tweets, you're more than welcome to do so. But essentially, what he did, not only with the Bulldogs, but before he came here to the Valley with Eastern Michigan, was he established a track record of revivals. When in his first year with the Eagles, for instance, they were dead last in the FBS in offensive S&P Plus. But by the time he left to come to Fresno State, they were right around the national average, which for a program that had been as moribund as EMU had been for decades, that's like a huge deal, you know? And he took an offense that had been ranked in the bottom 10 in the year before he arrived, and this year they were a top 30 offense by S&P Plus. So while stepping into that situation in Indiana may not be ideal because, as much as we like to pump up the Mountain West, I think we can be objective and say that they don't have an Ohio State or a Michigan or a Penn State year in and year out, and DeBoer's going to have to deal with all three of those teams every single season. Just aside from that, like he definitely earned that kind of move and that kind of opportunity.
So I'm looking at the USA Today database real quick of assistant coaching salaries. He was making basically 300, 333,000 as their OC at Fresno, which is not too bad. And go to Indiana, I think they have him listed here if I could pull it up real quick. Who it's he's probably gonna make. I don't have their exact I don't know who the OC was before. Is it Mike DeBoard?
Yeah.
Okay, he made $500,000 previously. So it's a decent bump in pay. Like, it's a good amount. As for prestige, like, I guess you go to a bigger program. Like, would you have made this type of move? Is it was this the right time for him to move? Because here's a couple reasons why. Maybe yes. Quarterback's gone, top receiver's gone. Your key offensive players are gone, so why not go? Because next year, Fresno State's still going to be good. They may not be as good offensively. There's a case to be made they may take a small step back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then that's the thing, right? If you have the opportunity presented to you, I think whether you're a coach or a player,
take it.
The answer remains the same. Like, you have to take it.
And we're not disparaging going to Indiana, because it's a move where you probably have to think about it, because, again, it's a school like you pointed out, what, one winning season in a long time?
It was one winning season since 1995, I believe.
And I think the winning season, and Kevin Wilson's a pretty good coach. He'll get them back going there. And I know they played Utah.
Well, he's not the coach anymore, is he?
Oh, I thought he was still, no?
No, I think he left. Oh. Did he not?
Maybe we should check out. But one of their winning seasons recently was against University. They played University of Utah, whatever the San Francisco Bowl is, the Red Box Bowl or Fight Hunger Bowl, whatever bowl that is. I thought he was still the coach. Oh, no, he's at Seattle, Ohio State now?
I honestly don't remember. This is how much we pay attention to Indiana football.
I'm checking it. No, he apparently is the Ohio State offensive coordinator. I thought he was the Indiana head coach.
I think there was, if I remember correctly, there was some kind of controversy, like off-field
controversy. Oh, okay, that's what it may have been. Okay, never mind. But regardless, here's the thing about the job. It's like, if you have the opportunity to make more money, go to a bigger conference. Like, yeah, you're in the Big Ten, but again, you're Indiana, which is, what, 10th out of 14, typically?
Yeah, they're middle of the pack at best.
Yeah, so if they do that in the conference, like, well, there's theory is, if you go to Indiana, if you can put up decent numbers, help them get them to a bowl team, you'll get maybe a better OC job or a head coaching job somewhere, which is fine. That's progression, but I'm pretty sure this wasn't like a slam dunk. Oh, to go to Indiana.
Well, if I remember correctly, I don't remember who tweeted it out, but DeBoer wasn't their first choice.
Interesting. I wonder who it was. So somebody turned him down.
I didn't actually see the name. I just remember hearing about that.
That's whatever, here or there. But regardless, we're not going to make fun of or say it's a bad move. But when people hop in our mentions and say, it's a much better job, it's a much better program, I'm like, well.
Dude, you're Indiana football.
Yeah. You are the beneficiary of being in a conference for 60 years that happens to have Ohio State, Michigan State. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, you're in that league, you play those teams, but unless you start winning and do great things, like, we could question, like, okay, it is a better move for him career-wise, but don't come out and talk crap on other schools where your team does nothing.
Well, and the good news, if you're a Fresno State fan, is that, I guess a couple bits of good news. One, Tedford's shown a willingness to kind of think outside the box to bring in, coordinators and the like. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew about Orlando Steinauer, for instance, before he came in and wrecked things for a year. So, there's talk that they might just promote Ryan Grubb, who came in from Eastern Michigan with DeBoer, to offensive coordinator, because he was the run game coordinator for the team last fall. And, he, for right now, is the team's offensive line coach as well.
Okay.
And thankfully, as far as I remember, Indiana doesn't have an opening for an offensive line coach right now. So there's a chance he might be in line for promotion, but at this point, I wouldn't underestimate any kind of potential move that Tedford might make.
Okay, all right. Should we go into the next coaching move?
Yeah, let's do it.
Lobos, not Bob Davey. Sorry to disappoint those who are hoping it's Bob Davey. They lost their offensive coordinator Calvin McGee to the
Ole Miss.
To be the quarterbacks coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rich Rodriguez is the OC, so. Did he see some writing on the wall about the situation there? Because that is kind of a step. That is a step down. Being an OC to a quarterback coach?
Well, I guess that depends on how you look at it. Is it better to be the OC for a struggling Group of Five team, or is it better to be the quarterback's coach for a Power Five team?
Two ways to look at it. It's a good move because Bob Davies, I guarantee, I noticed it last year, I'm like, he's not going to be the coach after this year. they're gonna let his contract, whatever his contract expires, he's done. There's no way he could stay. And I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't be surprised with all the shadiness that New Mexico and the Lobo Club has been doing the past couple years. Paul Krebs, the sweet situation, all sorts of covering up fights and crimes and stuff, allegedly, all that stuff going on. Maybe thinking, I'll get out of town and go be a QB coach there, and if I do okay, I'll get back on track. But if he sticks around, and let's just say New Mexico does okay. It's double-edged sword. If New Mexico does great, and say they go 9-3 next year, Davey's going to stick around, and he's, you know what I mean, he's not going to take over. If they do bad and Davey's fired, why is he going to take over that coach? So it's like, go somewhere else where you have a fresh start, far away. But as for career-wise, it's like the progression, it's not there. But thinking two to three steps ahead, why not go to Ole Miss, go with, Rich Rodriguez, what he does offensively, see if they can get things turned around there in Ole Miss and start winning. And then he'll get back and be an OC probably above the New Mexico level next job around.
Maybe.
Or even take over the OC job at Ole Miss, because Rich Rodriguez isn't staying there for that long. He's looking to get back to be a head coach.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that.
And so that way, thinking two or three steps ahead is fine. And in short term, it's fine, but it's just something where he left because I think he knows crap is going down to Mexico because of, just go read Ed on Fishbowl or go listen to their podcast the past 2 months. You'll see what's going on. And their new hire is from
Liberty.
Yay.
Joe Daly.
Who's that, Matt?
Well, he was the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach at Liberty. And it's not a bad hire, I wouldn't say, because if Liberty was able to do one thing this year, it was able to score points at times. And we saw a glimpse of them when they played New Mexico and beat New Mexico back in September. So I think it's an interesting fit because he ran a pretty balanced offense with the Flames last year. They threw the ball 49% of the time. So you're talking about a 50-50 split, which is kind of an interesting deviation from what New Mexico was doing before. Mm-hmm. You know, because obviously they had a step forward in their run pass ratio from 2 years ago. Though they tried to throw the ball more last year, and I would expect them to kind of take another step forward in that regard going into 2019. And it wasn't as though, you know, the passing game production wasn't bad. You know, Stephen Calvert maybe threw more interceptions on the whole than you would like. He did have 18 interceptions, but he did have 21 touchdowns as well, and he had about 13 yards per completion. So if you're a Lobos fan looking for more of that kind of evolution of the passing game, I think he's a name that's fine. But I think the question that you're left wondering is, you know, the situation that he's leaving in Liberty is kind of similar to the situation that he's inheriting in New Mexico, where the passing game was maybe explosive, if not efficient, and the running game was really, really iffy. Because if you just compare S&P Plus numbers, for instance, last year on the ground, Liberty was 122nd. Through the air, they were 87th, which I think owes a lot to where they ended up as far as offensive S&P Plus total. In the country, they were ranked 88th, which is fine, you know, a little bit below average. But I think it's going to leave kind of an open question for how are they going to answer the running game's woes that they really had this year. Because if you can't run the ball, you're not going to be able to throw the ball as effectively as you want to.
True, but one interesting note, like he said, they're going to lean more toward the passing attack, which they've been doing. Like this mention from Bob Davey is like, we still want to continue in the same direction we had under McGee with run past option schemes. Does Davey knows what he wants offensively? Because you're already moving toward passing. You like what McGee did, but you're the next coordinator away is the next step away from that, which is why you were actually good in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be good if they're going to be just a typical zone read or, you know what I mean, the type of passing attack? Like, he says he wants to continue that same direction, but it seems like that's not the case. And he brings in a guy who does a little bit of that, but I know it's not going to be what they did with Bob DeVries a couple years ago, but it seems like he wants to, I don't know, I get the point. You don't want to go in and just go from it's like taking Navy to what they do, triple option or Air Force, to go to a run and shoot like Hawaii does. That's a huge difference. I get you don't want to do the extremes, but it just seems to me he still wants to hold on to that I just don't know what Bob Davies doing. I'm not saying that hire is bad, but what Bob Davies wants to offensively, it seems like he doesn't really know.
I mean, I think you're going to see more of what you saw in 2018, which is more of a getting closer to 50-50, maybe like a 40-60 split between throwing the ball and passing it, or throwing the ball and running it, rather. I just realized I said the same thing twice. I mean, if you're looking for upside, you can point to the fact that Liberty was 35th in the country in scoring offense.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Top third.
But a lot of that had to do with putting up points against really iffy defenses, like,
New
for
Mexico.
instance, New Mexico
Or New Mexico State.
or New Mexico State or UMass. They put up 59 against UMass and still lost that game somehow.
Oof.
Or putting up 52 against Norfolk State, which is like, who cares, you know? I mean, I think it's an okay hire, especially if Davey wants to continue the evolution towards, moving away from the triple option. But at the same time, New Mexico doesn't have someone of the caliber of Antonio Gandy-Golden, who had over 1,000 yards for Liberty last year through the air. And they probably don't have someone like Frankie Hickson, who had over 1,000 yards on the ground. So, maybe that's a matter of, doing a little more in recruiting. Maybe it's a little more, unearthing and trying to find guys on the roster who can step up and provide that kind of explosive element. I'm not going to knock the hire until I see a little bit more. But if you're New Mexico, I think at this point you're kind of hoping that that kind of move works out.
You do too. And my point was, like, just reading what Dave was saying, it's like, why would you want to say you want to stick with that type of scheme when you bring in a guy who didn't really do that type of scheme? And maybe he's just referring to more of the play action zone read stuff or option passing attack. Maybe that's what he's actually meaning, but when he says he still wants to lean in the same direction he has been, you know what I mean? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, I don't know.
All
I
right,
guess we'll
so
find
let's
out.
go to San Diego State. There's a couple things here, football wise. They got the, here's what it started about a week or so ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago. Ryan Agnew and Christian Chapman split time, even when Chapman was healthy later in the year, which was, again, I hate it. It's weird. Stick with one guy. Agnew looked what, meh, at times. Okay, not
That's
good.
putting it, I mean, from my point of view, that's putting it
Yeah, I'm
charitably,
just
but
saying
continue.
he wasn't great, which is my point. So Rocky Long comes out and says a while back, Agnew's a starter, but we're going to bring in a grad transfer to challenge him for the starting job. That doesn't sound good.
Well, I think if you look back at Aztec's recent history, it's been a little bit mixed because while Maxwell Smith, on the one hand, wasn't terribly exciting, he did exactly what you would expect an Aztec's quarterback to do, which is make just enough plays and mostly get out of the way for the running game. But then you look at, for instance, Chris Laviano, who came over from Rutgers a couple of years ago, and he didn't even make it to fall camp, I think.
No, I think he let, he was here and gone. So I get it competition wise, but if he says you're the starter, here's the thing too. Agnew's been around for, well, he's gonna be senior for 4 years. He remember he had to bring in guys like Ryan Lindley had to come back into town to help because they're so thin at quarterback, and Agnew took all the reps and still didn't show anything. So it's like he's, I get it, hand the ball off to Juwan Washington. Pass the ball occasionally, like their tight end. Surprise deal for the NFL draft could be like a third round pick. It's like you had this guy on your team, you don't give him the ball more than however not many catches this year. But I get it. It's like he's like every chance you'll have in the spring to win the job to get the job. But it's like I get bringing guys in, JUCOs, your grad transfers, but he specifically mentioned bring in to compete for the starting job. It wasn't bringing a guy just to kind of push him or give him some competition to whatever. But it's like, he actually said to give him the chance to be the starting job. And this guy's not going to come in until fall camp. And so how
Well, there's
bad would
a
it be if he gets into fall camp and then, oh, you lose the job?
well, there's a couple of things. One, which I think is pretty interesting considering San Diego State's recent history, is that Rocky Long has come out and talked about using the spread formation a little more often.
Yeah. But he also said triple option's like the best offense you could use as well. But the spread, yeah, no, but yeah, continue with that. I read that too about the spread attack they want to kind of implement.
But I think that if you consider what Agnew brings to the table, if you adjust for sacks, for instance, he didn't run the ball that often. He's only credited with 39 carries, but he averaged almost 7.5 yards per run. So we know, like, he, even if he's not the most accurate passer, he was able to do things here and there with his legs as well. So I think that kind of conversation is something that if Agnew is the one who eventually wins the starting job, he could probably benefit from that. If, they throw more receivers out there, but it opens up lanes for him to run every so often. We saw that work here and there against them. One of the things that I think it was Kirk Kenny of the San Diego Union Tribune pointed to was the fact that in the bowl game, for instance, Ohio ran all over the Aztecs. And it wasn't just their running game, A.J. Ouellette. It was Nathan Rourke who did a lot of, he had 9 carries, 44 yards, 2 touchdowns in that win. So I do think that that kind of open-mindedness toward rethinking what they want to do on offense will benefit them. And the other thing is that they actually did bring in a guy, not a grad transfer, but a JUCO guy the other day.
Yeah, spring. He could be eligible for spring practice, and he led his JC team to a state championship. And it is, where does his name go? Had it in front of me right here.
Jordan Brookshire.
There it is, Jordan Brookshire. I was looking at the headline. I'm like, wait. So he'll come in. He's going to be confident. Say, I'm going to start. I'll compete. Do great. Let me ask you this, man. If they go to that spread attack, which it's good, like, if they're going to have a competition, have a guy in spring to do something, which, because it would look really bad if the guy came in. I assume if they're getting a, let me back up here. I assume if they're getting a JUCO guy, they're not going to get a grad transfer as well. That would kind of make sense.
I would think not. I mean, you never know, but I
Never know,
think
but.
that with the, especially with the other options that they still have on the roster as well, now all of a sudden you're talking about 3 or 4 guys who could compete for the starting spot.
Yeah, so have him come in, go during spring and do his stuff. But here's the thing. They want to go to a spread attack, which means what? More passing, right?
Or at least just a modest shift toward that, or at least presenting different looks for them to be able to do what they usually do, which is run the ball.
Sure, that's a possibility. Just to point this out, San Diego State's leading returning receiver is Tim Wilson. Would you like to guess how many catches he had last year?
Probably like 30 something.
Oh, you're generous. 19.
Was it that much? Oh, well, he had 38 targets at least.
Oh, okay. That's not catches. That's their leading. They did have Fred Trevilian, who had 22 receptions, who led the team. So it's like, if they're going to go to some sort of spread attack, you gotta, maybe these guys can catch the ball. Maybe their catch rate's amazing. Like 22 of 39, that's, or not 22, what do you say? Yeah, whatever, 19 of 30 something. That's whatever. You want to be about, what, 60% is a good pat catch rate? He did have 3 touchdowns. But it's like, if you're going to say you want to throw the ball more, have guys who can actually catch the ball. I don't
Yeah, I
know.
mean, I think
It's.
I think if you want to, for instance, let's go back to the Ohio comparison again. Do you know how often Ohio actually threw the ball last year?
I'm not sure now.
Just on a scale of 1 to 100, just take a wild stab.
Percentage wise, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, 40%.
Well, it was less than that.
Okay.
They actually threw the ball less often than San Diego State did. They only threw it 36.3% of the time, which is 122nd in the FBS. But a lot of what made that offense work was the fact that Nathan Rourke was able to make plays with his arm and with his legs. And I think that if Agnew can improve just a little bit, which admittedly I'm still a little bit skeptical of, or if this new guy, Brookshire, that they're bringing in can make the same kind of effective plays that he did at Laney College, because he completed 63% of his passes, but he also averaged 5 yards per carry on the ground, and he ran it about 150 times last year. That, I think, is the kind of performance that they need to make that kind of shift work. It's not necessarily a shift toward throwing the ball more that's going to make it work. It's just presenting a different face to the kind of offense that they're accustomed to putting out there.
That could work as well because they do lose a couple offensive linemen. But a couple things, like if you're going to that shift, say, because that means there's no more fullback likely. They're probably going to have a tight end who's going to be an H-back, and they're doing kind of line up in motion, maybe add a blocker on the one of the sides. Like University of Utah does that. They want to run the ball, but they still, which frustrates the end for me because they're bringing back Andy Lugwood, which, oh, jeez. That's another story for something else, not here. But
I thought he got hired at Vanderbilt.
he left Utah. Utah hired him, so he's back at Utah.
Oh.
He spent 2 years at Vanderbilt, I believe. So he's back at Utah because that's the most vanilla, lame hire ever. But again, I can talk about it. But my thing is, watching Utah play, they still trying to slowly or closely stick to what Urban Meyer did like a decade ago, where they still want to show the spread attack but run the ball a lot. And it's worked okay here or there. Not amazing, but I just think if you want to run the ball, why do a 3 receiver, 1 tight end, 1 back set? Why do you need to be in shot? I know you can do more looks. Same reason they do pistols. Same reason they'll do the diamond formation, all these different teams. But if you want to run the ball, Aztecs have been extremely successful with it. I get it. Maybe they want to use Agnew's feet to do some different opportunities. But here's the thing. If you're running the ball, you're running the ball. If you're going to go to a spread, you are going to, by theory or actuality, you should be throwing the ball a little bit more. And he still can't throw the ball very well.
I mean, maybe. I think if you look at the teams in the Mountain West who were actually running the ball best on a per-play basis last year, mm-hmm. you can see that they all do it a little bit differently. Like, for instance, Utah State was number one in rushing offense last year, 5.5 yards per carry. They were running out of the spread all the time, but they combined that with, like, you know, a very fast tempo in order to keep opponents off balance. You know, same thing with UNLV. They were running a lot of 3 and 4 wide receiver mm-hmm. sets. Wyoming was almost the exact opposite. They were third in the conference, and by the end of the year, it was basically Sean Chambers and Nico Evans and pretty much nothing else. And then, of course, Air Force runs the triple option. Mm-hmm. So I think I would object to the point that there's one right way to do it.
I just mean they're changing the way that's been successful. It seems like they're changing just to switch the quarterback, which maybe it'll work fine. I'm just saying that look what's worked for you. I know the end of the year didn't go great. They had injuries to running backs and quarterbacks. Maybe this will be a good evolution for the offense to show more looks. Because I've said forever, if San Diego State could run basically their same consistency or efficiency level, but add in an average passing attack, they would be dominant in the conference. Maybe this is the move they need to make to see that.
I mean, I think when you consider the drop-off that they had on the ground last year compared to years before that. And we'll talk more about that at length as we get more into team previews and into more off-season stuff. But I'm just going to throw it out there that they were 92nd in rushing S&P Plus this year. They were 110th in offensive stuff rate. So the ground game wasn't working to the same degree than it had been in years past. Mm-hmm. And maybe more to the point, they were 8th in the conference as in yards per carry with 4.05. And that's a far cry from what they were doing in the 3 or 4 or 5 years before that. Mm-hmm. So if I'm Rocky Long and I'm thinking ahead to what this conference is going to look like and what my running game can do, I've got no problem with something like that.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I've said it a million times. I'm just saying, like, if you have a chance to – or not a chance, but the way you've been doing it, maybe it is just a little tweak. Maybe they'll still pass it to only 2% more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't help, like, the running game. I hope it's not reactionary to that bad season running the ball because, again, Washington was hurt. Tyler Romo got kind of kicked off the team. There's injuries on the offensive line that typically didn't hurt them the past couple years. And so maybe – I just hope it's not overreaction. But I'm just – it just seems a little skeptical because Agnew hasn't been a great quarterback. He's ran a little bit. Maybe the plays obviously weren't meant for him if they're going to switch a little bit. And I'm not saying you can't run the ball with 3 wideouts or – and 2, you know what I mean, or 2 running backs, 2 wideouts, no tight end. It's just different. Again, if it's not broken, maybe it is kind of broken. Why change it? But I hope it's not a reactionary move to we ran the ball poorly last year. We had injuries. Let's change this. And hopefully it's just a tweak to a change where they could still run the ball well. It's just, I don't know, they've been doing it so well. That's why I'm kind of hesitant. Why make the move when you're not bringing in new coaches to make this change either? It's still your same staff.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but I think it also helps that, kind of like we talked about with Hawaii a little bit ago, like they're not losing that much up front. Like they're losing a couple of pieces, but that's another place where they've recruited really well in the last couple of years too. So, you know, I think they've got, what, a 3-star guy coming up at left tackle in Desmond Bessent. They've got another, what, how many other people are they losing up front? I think that's it, right? Pope and Romer.
I believe that's it. Yeah, just the 2, I think.
And they're bringing just about everybody back on the running game. Not only Washington, but Chase Jasmine's coming back. Chance Bell's coming back. Jordan Bird is coming back. I'm not expecting a complete overhaul. I think they're trying to diversify the offense a little bit. And I think that if I was an Aztecs fan, I would say that's a good move.
All right, now that makes sense. It's just, I hope it works out for them. It's just people, I don't, whatever. I've already said it a million times. Maybe this week, again, like Hawaii going to run a shoot. Is enough of a change where it surprises people and they beat up on whoever early in the offseason, preseason. So, any other news we need to go through for this newsy type podcast? The reunion is back. The
show. I think as far as recent big headlines, that's just about it.
You had the East-West Shrine game over the weekend.
That's true.
Brett Rippon played quite well. You had, like I said, Tarver played well. You have who else? There's about six or eight. I did a quick recap, or not recap, kind of a scouting report on the guys from around the web who went to who were there to see stuff. This weekend though, Senior Bowl. We will have
it's gonna be fun.
Here's what you need to know, Senior Bowl, and we're not going to dive too deep into. I did a quick write up about guys like also one website that's kind of new. Do you ever visit the Draft Network, Matt?
I do.
It's a new site. I forget who used to where they used to be before, but it's like amazing. So that's where I got some of my info. You have it's thedraftnetwork.com. They have a Senior Bowl hub there. Check out their stuff. They're amazing. I think we've had some of their guys on our podcast before. I don't recall who, but I'm pretty sure. They have a ton of stuff. We got Josh Oliver, San Jose State, Dax Raymond, Utah State, and then Carl Granderson. They're all out there, Senior Bowl. Check. We'll have some updates like team visits, who's visiting with who, who's doing what. But it looks like Dane Buechler, the athletic, to bounce around, likes Josh Oliver, excuse me, number 9 overall tight end, might be picked. Dax Raymond's in that mix. But here's the thing. If you're at the Senior Bowl, you're probably getting drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So look out for that. Our all-time teams. How's that coming along?
I think it's coming along okay.
It's sort of coming along because I'm working on it and I've been behind a couple days. But we're doing that. We'll wrap up with this. We're doing our all-time Mountain West teams. We've done Air Force and Boise State. Depending when I post this, I'll probably post up ASAP. I got another something else we'll post later. But we'll have all – here's what we're doing. Air Force up, Boise State up, CSU, Fresno State, every team, even TCU, BYU, and Utah will be in the mix. I'm excited to see, Matt, the all-time all-conference team over 20 years.
That's going to be fun.
How far are you along on your Fresno State picks? Have you submitted any picks to me yet?
If I'm being totally honest, I have not.
That's fine because I'm behind it. Fresno's coming up later this week. But that'll be exciting. Here's the thing, Boise State. I'll talk – me and Raj are doing a little show later today to talk about Boise State stuff, but there is a big fight on Twitter between like Doug Martin, Jeremy McNichols, and Jay Ajayi of who should make that first team.
It's honestly hard to go wrong with any one of them.
And that doesn't even account for Alexander Mattison as well.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, I was surprised on this. Doug Martin got the most votes on Twitter. I think that's more nostalgia than anything. Because
Doug Martin was really good.
Well, but he also only played 1 year in the Mountain West, and that's all we're considering. So those transition years for Boise State, because that was their heyday, like Kellen Moore, second team quarterback. How's that possible? Well, played 1 year. So we have all that coming up. We're going to try to do some all-time game stuff. What are we doing for our next show? We need to decide and get back on a schedule here, sort of.
I have no idea, to be honest.
We will discuss offline, but our plan, and I stress plan, is once a week?
Yeah, I think so.
We will figure it out. We will try to be consistent. Whether me and Matt record a bunch before and put them out once a week, we'll figure something out. But I will say this. Our next show will be looking back at our big hit or misses for the year. Is that good enough?
Sounds good.
So we'll look at picks. So if you want to tweet in anything, MWC Wire, or old takes, you want to get them tagged along with us, the freezing old takes exposed because we're terrible at picks on some parts. Some good, some not good. Also, we need to figure out, Matt, who your team is to be eighth place to win a bowl, go to the bowl game next year, too.
Yeah, that's true. Who do I think is going to win two games and ultimately make a bowl game?
That will be much later down the road. But next week, we'll kind of look back at the year, maybe look at some best games a little bit, kind of bad predictions and stuff like that. And we'll probably be doing that about a week after you hear this. We'll figure something out and get going here. But again, check us out, MWR.com. We got hoops. We got football, random football stuff, because you know what, Matt? February means San Diego State spring football.
Exactly.
And so we'll get all over that stuff and just keep hanging out. And if you like the show, leave a review, tweet at us, then say, hey, glad you're back. And we'll see you next time.